Hey, I'd like to apologize for this week's BGR recording. The microphone setting wasn't done properly, so the recording audio quality is not up to par. But the content is still pretty good, so we decided to still use this clip and hope you enjoy, and we'll definitely get that fixed next time. See ya. Hello, hello. How are you doing, Matt?
Hey, Johnny. I'm very good, thank you. I'm a lot colder than usual. We're having a cold snap here in Cape Town, where it's not as cold as you get in Canada in your winter time, but very cold for my standards. So doing my best to keep warm. I believe it's about 4 or 5 degrees at the moment, and I'm in an office that isn't heated. So yeah, just trying to keep warm as I can. How about you?
Well, our weather is quite nice over here. Just going out in shorts and t-shirts. So it's probably the best time of the year in terms of weather, because a little bit later on, Toronto gets somewhat hot. It could get a little humid as well. So I'm just enjoying the weather. And it's always kind of weird to me. I've never been to the Southern Hemisphere. So it always sounds weird to have kind of a cold, you know, June, July, August, and then having
Christmas on the beach.
Yeah, Christmas barbecue. I'm like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's a strange thing because I do a lot of travel and there's this kind of fantasy around a white Christmas that we have here because we never get it. So I always love it when I get to be in a place over Christmas period and it's white with snow and cold. But yeah, we generally are in our bathing suits on the beach in Christmas time, enjoying like some of the hottest weather we get. And you know, it's a very different dynamic to what you have over there.
Yeah, definitely need to travel to the Southern Hemisphere at some point, since I'm recording this podcast with you and I'm also working with a New Zealander.
Yeah, absolutely. Once the borders start opening again would be a good time.
Absolutely.
So how was your week?
Yeah. So apart from the nice weather, to be completely transparent, I had a very rough week. As you know, our podcast editor, I think it's not just a podcast editor, but we also could do better in coordinating our podcast editing. So I had to edit the podcast late Monday night to make sure it got shipped.
Yeah, I think you're giving the editor a little bit of credit. Well, you know, to be fully transparent, we're using multiple different editors at the moment, trying to figure out who to stick with. And the one that we used last week that I have been using for a while, so, you know, the blame should fall on me, he flaked out on us and didn't deliver the podcast on time when he promised to. It caused a bit of a knock-on effect where it was super late when he flaked out on us and I was on a serious big contract project that I had to get right and was so tired by 12 and he hadn't delivered the podcast and he said no he would, and unfortunately Johnny had to step in and edit the podcast and it kept him up a lot longer than he should have on, it was your Monday night, right?
Yeah, so it was a very rough start to the week. I had a really rough day too because I woke up, I had a call with a customer in London. It was a good call, but he was having some trouble as well with another vendor. And then I knew that at 5 p.m. I had to start working with the contractor because it was in New Zealand. So it was like a really rushed day anyway. And the meeting was long. It was 3 hours long with Liam in New Zealand. So by the time it was like 8:30, had dinner, and then I had to start editing the podcast. And I was just so drained after like a 14-hour workday. But at the same time, I almost wanted to kind of take it out on the podcast editing out of frustration, because this is the thing that I can control. It was just one audio file. I know what to do. I just need to ship it. And I made a promise to myself, and it was out of frustration.
So how did you feel once you had finished editing? Did you feel like it was this therapeutic thing that helped you, or did you still feel the frustration?
Honestly, there's still some frustration afterwards. Not because of the podcaster. I didn't really care about the editor.
I cared.
Yeah, you cared. You definitely cared because you dealt with this person directly. But for me, I felt I was lightheaded like afterwards, because I felt like I couldn't go on anymore because I was looking at this 40 something minute audio clip at like 25 minutes. I was like, man, I could not function anymore. Like, my brain is not functioning, but I have to ship this. So it was that type of, you know, the next morning I didn't feel like myself, so I had to go out for a walk, and that's when I wanted to record that video message to you, because I felt like I needed to share it with someone to express myself, maybe just believing that maybe the entire world wouldn't understand me. Maybe you would, because you kind of been going on this journey.
I think it's an important thing. And if you do this in a very, like if you build businesses and buy businesses and grow businesses and do what we're trying to do in a very siloed fashion where it's just you and you don't have some sort of a support system or somebody you can just even bounce ideas with, it can get very lonely and you can get burnt out very fast. And I've flirted with burnout in a lot of different ways. And I think, you know, this is an important consideration. It's an important point that you've brought up, is that it's always good to find somebody else that's going through the process with you. Well, not with you, but going through the same process as you, that you can talk to. Because, you know, times do get tough and things, frustrating things happen. And you can go through weeks where nothing goes right. And to take that all in yourself, I think it's challenging. I know on the first episode, we mentioned different topics that we would like to talk about in future episodes. And the one that I'm still really keen to explore at some point is the whole burnout aspect of doing what we're doing. Especially in my case, because like I said, I flirted with it. And I'm right now, to be honest, taking on way more than I should, or at least any healthy adult should at a given time. I'm wrestling with that and trying to figure out ways to deal with it. But yeah, I think it's worth an episode at some point.
This is a perfect topic. And the reason why I brought this up is because on Tuesday, I usually listen to this podcast called Startups for the Rest of Us by Rob Walling. So he actually interviewed his wife, who was a clinical psychologist. And yeah, so imagine like on Monday, I had like a 14-hour workday, you know, just shipped the podcast at 2 a.m., 2:30 a.m. in the morning. And then Tuesday morning, I listened to this podcast and she talked about how burnout is not something binary. There could be sort of like a scale. There's a certain scale. And I definitely felt a lot of the stuff that she talked about was resonating with me. I definitely felt that I was definitely approaching that point. So the deal began in late March and then kind of died, and it reignited again in April. So from the beginning of April and today it's mid-June, I didn't take a single day break. And it's like sometimes I wouldn't work so much, but I would mentally be thinking about things. I would want to jot down, even if I'm not kind of actively working on something, my brain is processing the to-dos that I have to do, because it feels like there's this weight kind of every single day, even during diligence, even during the migration and takeover, every single day felt like a weight being put on my shoulder because I need to start to grow this, because the growth compounds. And I feel this curtain kind of coming down as days has gone on. And definitely right now the curtain is sort of like midway, right? It's not like completely dark, right? I don't feel that I'm in a completely dark place, but I could definitely feel the curtain is coming down. It's getting darker and darker. So this is Tuesday morning, right? So Tuesday morning, that's why I call up to my friend. My wife calls him my BFF. So Henry Dillon, just a shout out to you. So he is also a SaaS founder, successful SaaS founder who is interested in talking about the topic of mental health. I talked to him for an hour just to hopefully find some release. And then I got email subscription bomb. I don't know if you've heard of that or experienced that.
I've heard of it just because I saw your notes and I looked it up, but I've never experienced it and I'm very new to learning about it. So tell us more.
Yeah. So at 8:05 on Tuesday morning, I started receiving these subscription confirmation emails. So it's sort of like, you know, people, if you subscribe to a newsletter, sometimes they ask you to do a double opt-in or you sign up to an account, right? Like any, you know, Uber or Airbnb or any of those accounts. So I started getting random emails in my primary inbox in Gmail. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. Maybe there's some changes in the Gmail spam filter. But I noticed that they're using my primary email address, right? So, and all of them are using my primary email address. And it's not just my primary inbox, it's also the social tab, the updates tab in Gmail. So I've been getting a ton of those emails. They've used random names, but use my email. So
hold on a second. Are they using your email of the business you just purchased, or is it this your personal email?
This is my personal email.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is my personal email. So someone got a hold of my personal email. Well, got a hold of, in the sense that, well, they know what my personal email is, which is not that difficult. And you can do it with any of your friend's email, right? You know their emails, and then someone just did it to automatically sign you up to a whole bunch of these like random websites, like boating websites.
Oh, man.
Different merchants, law firms, accounting firms. So in the end, I think during that workday, I got over 1,200 emails. And it's still going on. I mean, I think that the rate kind of slows, but I'm still getting some emails today. So yeah, so that's my first 2 days. It's been a pretty rough week, yeah.
Oh, man, sorry to hear it. And I don't know if there's anything that I can say that'll make it feel better, but I do hope that this next week is better than the week you've just experienced.
So one thing I want to talk about is, so when I was talking to my good friend, Henry, who is also a SaaS founder, he suggested one thing, and which is called daily pages. So if you go online and you do a search, it's basically a daily routine where you take a pad of paper, and the only rule is you have to write for 3 pages. No structure, no other rules. It's just pure thought to paper.
Is it called morning pages or daily pages?
Morning pages. Yeah, morning pages. Yeah, and I think there are like different variants, just like any other kind of habit building practices out there. So I've been starting to do that, and I'm so dry in terms of like my soul, my brain is so dry right now that I cannot get past a single page. So I try to write anything that comes into my mind, and at about like one page or like 3/4 of a page, I have no more to give. But I'm still doing that. I want to continue to this practice to see whether kind of it will calm myself down. So thank you, Henry, for...
Is that because you're tired, or is it because, why do you get to that point where you feel blocked?
Yeah, so I'm jumping back and forth, but when I listened to that burnout podcast, Dr. Sherry Walling talked about how when you're burnout, it's not just sort of like a mental thing, right? Like they did brain scans, and your brain structure looks different when you're experiencing a burnout. So there are like physiological effects. I'm experiencing a little bit of that. Like there's this sort of drunkenness feeling that I'm feeling.
Have you ever heard of the term brain fog?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be it. And that's generally what I get when I get burnt out as well. Like for me, burnout has manifested itself in a few different ways. The first time I experienced it, before I even knew what all this was and like did some research into it, was it manifested itself in anxiety. And I had never been anxious in my life. It was about 6-7 years ago. And I was working full-time at a job, and I had just taken on, like, I was feeling very stressed around the time. There was a lot of stuff that was going on, young kids, new house build, a lot of work pressure. And what happened to me at that point is I was driving along the highway home from work one afternoon, and just before the turn off on the highway that kind of goes onto the road that leads to my house, I completely passed out. So I started getting pins and needles through my whole body. And then I just kind of lost consciousness I don't know how long it was, but it wasn't very long because I was able to, you know, carry on driving and pull myself off the side of the road. And then there was just this like tingly sensation, pins and needles all over my body. And I phoned my wife. I'm like, you know, I love you. I love the kids. So I'm actually believe that I'm having a heart attack. And she completely freaked out, obviously. And I managed to drive myself to the hospital, not knowing what the heck was going on, thinking that I was literally having a heart attack while I was dying. They put me on all these ECG machines, and they did all these tests, and everything was perfect. And they were like, there's just nothing wrong with you. Anyway, in any case, subsequent to that, I saw a few doctors, and it was determined that it was stress and anxiety that had caused me to literally blank out on the middle of the highway. And that's one way it manifests itself to me, but then also like brain fog, where you literally can't think straight. You feel confused, disorganized, hard to focus. You can't put words to thoughts. And that's like the more common occurrence that I get these days when I, you know, and it's something semi-physical that I can feel and then recognize that I'm on the path to burnout or I'm completely burnt out already.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that I wouldn't get to that point where I have to drive to the hospital and believing that I'm dying.
Well, an important part of this is recognition and acknowledgement that if you are taking too much on and you're feeling like stressed out and you're feeling like you can't think straight, is to actually take a break, because your body needs it, your mind needs it. And even though it might not be the most convenient thing at the time, you might have a lot of pressure around, you know, whatever it is, if it's in business, personal, family, whatever. But, you know, there's times that you've got to physically force yourself to take your foot off the pedal and just slow down, take a weekend off, go to one of your favorite places. And that's why, I mean, since we've been recording this podcast, I believe I've been to the Kruger Park twice, because that's my happy place and that's where I go to unwind. I was there last week and then I think it was the second episode, I was there as well. And that's why I do it. That's exactly why I do it. I do it to get out, to go into the middle of nowhere where there's very little cell phone reception, Wi-Fi signal, and it's just me, nature, animals, and I can completely unwind and, you know, reset myself in a way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's super important. And the good thing is that it's the summer here. Weather is nice. So I'll figure something out. I'll try to not completely burn myself down and to the ground.
Yeah, go spend some time outdoors. It'll do you the world of good.
So the fun never ends, apparently. On Wednesday, a customer canceled after paying 3 days prior. And I've been trying to support them. And part of the challenge was that it deals with integration with Facebook. And there was a lot of going back and forth. And to be frank, I wasn't even able to do that much because it's a part of the area I'm still not very familiar with. So I had to go back to the contractor, kind of go back and forth. And in the end, I found out that there was a limitation to the software. But I guess that's okay. Like, to me, canceling is not such a big deal. I think what I did last night was, it was very similar to my Monday late night editing. The customer was in Thailand. They paid. So I wanted to make sure that if they're not getting value after 3 days, they should get a refund. So I preemptively offer it to them. But what I was hoping for, and this might be my wishful thinking, was that I want to give them of the 5-star treatment, even if they didn't find value at the beginning and maybe there were frustrations. I wanted to get feedback. So I was hoping that by going above and beyond for this particular customer, that the least state that they could do would be to tell me what was the most frustrating thing and exactly where they experienced this frustration. So because there was like a 12-hour time difference, I wasn't able to jump on a call with them and have this like really high bandwidth communication. So most of the time I'm sort of guessing. So when they cancel, I kind of have an understanding of, well, they were stuck here, like at this area, in this area before, maybe this is what they were trying to do, but I wasn't sure. And they were trying to run a campaign. I just wanted to know like exactly what's the situation, were they trying to access it with different accounts, to nail down exactly what the use case I need. But the most disappointing thing was I probably spent last night 4 or 5 hours just to give them the refund. I mean, it feels like a long time, but it's not just that. But there's drafting the email. There is actually going into the code to make sure that the cancellation was successful because, well, when one thing breaks, everything starts breaking. So even when they were trying to cancel, it was throwing up like a 500 error on the server. So I got an email knowing that they want to cancel. So I was communicating with them on what exactly they want to do. They didn't exactly want to cancel. They just didn't want to pay because there's a free tier. They just want to drop down to the free tier. And again, that's something that the software is not very good at supporting at this point because it's sort of somewhat of a corner case. So I had to go into the code and manually removing a subscription and downgrading for them and doing all this work, explaining to them what I was looking for, which is simply some feedback, what they're trying to do, exactly trying to detail. But I'm still yet waiting for the reply. So,
oh man, well that sounds just like the exact customers that I deal with, unfortunately. And I mean, I feel you with regards to cancellations and refunds. I know you said that you don't take them to heart too much, but I do. And I also got one this week, and it was tough, and it's tough to take, even if it's for a reason that, you know, is not my fault. I find them hard, and maybe I'll get over it one day, but I still, every time I see the, I've got a contact form on my site, and one of the options that you kind of use to describe what your contact request is about is refund request, and it comes through as the title in my email. Every time one of those refund request emails pops up on my phone, I get this little bit of a sinking feeling, and it's not nice. I can feel some of your pain.
For sure. I definitely felt that. And that's why it kind of reminded me of my Monday, because I felt like this is something that I ought to make right. So doing the refund, even without them asking, making sure that the downgrade was successful, despite that they don't mind for me to just like do a cancel, which would be a much simpler process for me. But I was gripping onto this thing, just like I want to ship this podcast editing, is that I wanted to feel in control of the experience. It honestly felt like a lot of things were sort of outside of my control. First of all, well, I'm not familiar with this area of the code, right, with the integration. So I kind of relied on the contractor. And it turns out that, oh, there's this annoying and frustrating experience that a customer would face that is also sort of out of my control. But I've read this book called Extreme Ownership. And basically, maybe this is actually detrimental and going against the whole like burnout discussion that we talked about. But it talks about that when you have a problem, you want to own that problem, right, in an organization. Because it's really easy for people to just kind of point fingers. And in the end, nothing gets done, right? Like people just point fingers at each other. So you own something to the extreme where if it's your employee that caused the problem, well, who hired that employee? That's you, right? Despite that, I didn't design this code. I didn't, you know, came up with this product. I own this product now. So if the customer has a frustrating experience, well, it's my fault. If the contractor wasn't able to fix something because of a certain issue with the code base, with the servers, with whatever, it's my fault. If I'm not able to grow this, it's my fault.
That's an interesting philosophy or take on this, but not sure that I fully agree, but I can understand where it's coming from, where the author of that, it was a book, right, that you read?
Yeah.
Extreme Ownership.
Yeah. But this is a Navy SEAL like guy.
Is it the guy that wakes up at 4 a.m. every morning?
Yeah. Jocko. Yeah.
Jocko. Yeah.
So you've heard of him, yeah.
I followed him on Instagram for about a month until I got sick of him, every story showing a picture of his watch at 4 a.m. I was like, okay. It does make sense, but it's got to be a balance. It's got to be a balance that if you're feeling stressed out, you don't want to put too much pressure on yourself, but you also don't want to flake out. You know, when we get to my updates, we're going to very seriously talk about flaking out. but before we get to that, I want to find out from you, did anything go right in your week? You had a really tough week, but was there anything positive that you could take out of the week?
So what I promised to ship last week, I pretty much hit those two things. So one thing I mentioned, I said I wanted to begin the work and ship something, ship tiered pricing change. And I said, not only that, right? Because well, how do I prove that? So in our notes, you probably don't even remember. I said, I wanted to show Matt a link where he can click into it and he can actually see it. So can you please click into the link and verify with the audience that I'm not lying. I'm not making stuff up.
I am opening it.
Yes.
And it looks like a stage insight.
Yes. So that's the first step.
And I see non-usage-based pricing.
Yes.
Awesome. Well done. It's great.
That's also sort of evidence that the staging environment was working. So I've been working really hard on this past Saturday just to get the staging environment up. That explains the Saturday. That explains the Monday night work that I have to do with Liam to get this up and running. So staging is good. And then the second piece I wanted to ship was to reduce the AWS bill. And that I also have proof of work. And can you explain what I shared with you?
Yeah, I'm looking at, in our notes doc here for the podcast, a graph that shows very high numbers, drastically reducing on the 10th-ish of June.
Yes.
Maybe by about 30-40% reduction in the numbers on that graph. So I'm presuming that's your costs dropping around the 10th of June.
Yeah, so that's the daily costs that I'm paying. That's my AWS bill, actually. So I was paying about $40 a day, and now it's at a pretty consistent $25 a day. So there's actually more that it could be saved, but at least that's step one. So from the revenue point of view, I mean, it's about, what, like a $250 saving. So you're looking at about 10 new customers in a sense, right? Like, it's almost like I just got 10 new customers or 8 new customers.
Yeah, that's great. Well done. So how did you end up doing that? How did you save the money?
After our call, that's also the same Saturday, actually, while I was waiting the staging environment to come up. So I just go in and start ruthlessly looking at every single thing that I can remove, tons of snapshot. A couple of big savings were just like reducing the replicas of some servers that I was using. Part of it is the work of Liam, who helped me transition to sort of lighter weight server infrastructure. There's a combination of things, and we're still continuing to focus on right now about 35% of my costs is actually, you see the purple bars. Yes, so that is my database cost, but that requires some downtime to the service. That's why we want to leave that to a later stage. We want to clean up the low-hanging fruits first, and then we can schedule the database. Because, I mean, once you break the database, right, like there could be huge repercussions in terms of, you know, people not being able to use your service. So we want to be kind of tread carefully there. But we have a plan already in place on how to reduce that. That requires a little bit, like 5 minutes of downtime. So we are planning on that.
Not much better than cost-saving money.
Yeah, and it's consistent, right? It's consistent. Like even if I get 10 new customers, they might churn, you know, after 3 months. But this is consistent. I don't have to pay AWS that money, right? Every single day I'm getting some money back.
And it helps, you know, move the payback period of the deal sooner. So if you're making more money, there's two ways you can make money. You can either get more customers or you can reduce costs. If you can do both of those, it's even better. But just by reducing costs, it means you're earning more money every month and you're making your money back quicker that you invested on the deal.
Exactly, exactly. So that's, yeah, one of the things that I looked at, which was an opportunity when I saw their, when I found out their AWS bill during the due diligence process. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
What about you, Matt? Like, what happened last week? Did you ship anything?
Yeah, like I said, I flaked out. Yeah, and you know, that's 2 weeks in a row, and I'm quite embarrassed about it. And I like being embarrassed about it because it's going to force me to be better this week. I had a busy week.
So you said you were going to, it forces you to be better this week. So is that a promise? Is that something that I can?
The big problem that I had was in the last 2 weeks. The first week, I knew that I was going to have downtime because I was away, and I didn't make a solid commitment. And then, you know, I just said, hey, I was going to do some updates to the settings page of the plugin. And then I piggybacked on that for last week. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to make some updates to the settings page. And it's far too broad an ambition or a goal or an achievement for a week to make it meaningful in any way. So I could have, you know, made like one line of code change and hey, I would have met my goal because I did some work on the settings page. But that's not the intention for this section. So what I'm going to do this week is get more specific, like you did. You showed me a pricing page, you committed to it, and you showed it to me this week. I'm going to get more specific about what I want to achieve in the week, and that's hopefully going to help push me forward and get stuff done. But no excuses. I was tired. It was a busy week, and I started on a new client project through my contracting that took up a lot of my time this week. And it is what it is, and I'm going to have to just be better so that I'm not embarrassed next week. But one of my commitments last week was to review the analytics, and I did do that. I wanted to make sure that my tracking was working, and surprise, surprise, it is working. So I went and it was quite exciting to go into my analytics dashboard and kind of follow the sales trail of people coming into the website, what pages they look at, and then how they convert, and kind of seeing the monetary values in analytics was quite cool as well. It appears right now that most people upgrade based on the upgrade call to action that I've put inside the plugin. So if you're on the free version of the plugin and you go ahead and create 50 topics, so hopefully that's not you creating them, but your community that you build in on your site, there comes a little notice in the plugin that says, hey, you've created 50 topics. You know, I hope you're enjoying the plugin. Here's a upgrade offer that we present to them for them to upgrade. A lot of people, the upgrades come from referral traffic from sites that have the plugin installed. Not entirely. There's, you know, some of it comes directly from Google. Some of it comes from the WordPress repository. But, you know, overall, I thought a little bit about the analytics and like, what value does this give me right now? And I coincidentally read a really good article on a website called Start a Story. It's a website that kind of profiles people that have started businesses and talks about the businesses and how they've grown their businesses. It's really interesting. I read it weekly. And there was a profile of a person that I've loosely followed in the WordPress space, a guy called Jason Coleman. And he's got a plugin called Paid Memberships Pro. And he's built that plugin to $100,000 a month. And he's got quite a few people on a team building it that he's kind of grown. And in thinking about like, how is this information around analytics useful to me right now? And in combination of reading that article that he wrote, I came to the conclusion that this information and micro optimizations around sales and marketing is not what I need to focus on right now. At least I don't believe it is. On such a small scale that I'm dealing with now, knowing how people convert is useful, but it's not going to move the needle in terms of the growth that I want to see in the plugin. Like, I want to see, you know, in a period of 2 to 3 years, 10x growth, even more than that. And in this article, there was a few really good quotes that I highlighted and kept for myself. And I'll go through two that really resonated and how they relate to my journey thus far. And one of them was that Jason says, $1,000 per month is halfway to $10,000 per month. The reason for that is because of the different stages that you grow through when buying or building a business. Initially, like, to get from 0 to 1,000 is usually a very long process and takes a lot of time, unless you get super lucky. Once you get to 1,000, there's almost this compounding effect in growth that you experience, assuming you continue to kind of grow and maintain the plugin. That's why he says that you go from 1,000 to 10,000, it's kind of halfway. You know, it's not halfway to 2,000, it's that compounding growth. And if you look at any kind of growth curves of a lot of these software businesses, that's generally what happens. And I'm in that stage now between 1,000 and 10,000, and it's an extremely difficult stage. And Jason talks about a little bit about this in his article. It's a hard stage, and it's a stage where a lot of people give up because you're not quite earning enough money to at least have confidence that this could work in the long term. And it's easy to flake out and say, hey, well, you know, I got it to this and I can't see a way to grow it any further. But if you continue to stick to it and you continue to kind of build momentum, the growth starts to accelerate from this point on. And it's definitely not the point to drop out. And one of the advantages of buying businesses is you can accelerate yourself, you know, to that $1,000 mark, which is essentially what I did with this plugin. It was a little bit less than $1,000 per month when I took over. It was about $700. And you can accelerate that really long initial process. You don't have to go through that on kind of proving the concept and proving that it's viable and people are willing to pay for it and get in that, you know, that first $1,000 a month revenue. So that's the advantage of buying businesses. But you know, every time I feel like I'm at this really difficult stage and I don't know how I'm going to get to the next stage, I don't have enough money to hire people to help me out and grow this, I'm going to relook at that quote and say, hey, I'm halfway to my $10,000 per month. But then more applicable to what I'm doing and the stage where I'm at right now, there was a quote, and I'll read it directly from the article. It says, early on, you will often grow faster focusing on the hundreds and thousands of customers you don't have yet versus the handful of customers that you already have. And this one was like a big aha moment, because I very much feel, and I spoke about this 2 episodes ago, that there's a huge market that's around discussion boards for WordPress. I've talked about my free plugin having 2,000 users and my biggest competitor having 300,000 users. If I add all the plugins together, I would say there's about 500 to 600,000 WordPress users that use a discussion board. Of those users, I've got 2,000 of them, which is a very small pie. I'm missing out on, let's say, 498,000 users. And that's the market that I need to approach and convert to use my plugin. And the way to do that is not through micro optimizations and checking analytics and some new sales and marketing techniques. The way to do that is right now to bring my quality up to the standard of my competitors and better, and offer the features that the customers need. I feel like my focus, and again, I've spoken about this a little bit in the last two episodes, needs to be on slowly but surely, incrementally, maybe a little bit faster than slowly, but working on features on the plugin that will be the features that people see and want and would be willing to switch to my plugin for. So my focus is going to be on building. This is kind of a build phase right now for the next 3 to 6 months, and hopefully get to that point where I can say, hey, now I'm really able to compete, and then I can accelerate marketing efforts. Hopefully the users will start coming and start using my plugin.
I totally agree that going from 1,000 to 10,000 is actually, despite you saying that is extremely difficult, I would say it's probably much easier than going from 0 to 1,000. So if I turn back the clock, right, would you say you would rather build from 0 to 1,000 rather than buying WP discussion board?
Oh, no way. No, I'd rather accelerate myself to that $1,000, and 1,000 to 10,000, theoretically, and I've seen this in a lot of cases, happens a lot sooner, a lot quicker than it takes a time to get from 0 to 1,000.
Absolutely, yeah. Because I think, because I've built stuff from scratch as well, like going from that 0 to 1,000, sometimes right now you know what to work on, right? There are fairly basic features where you can go in and you can kind of, maybe you don't have a precise roadmap of like, this is for sure number one, number two, number three, but you can get to that, right? Whereas if you're trying to build something from scratch, it could be a discussion board, it could be an image optimizer WordPress plugin, it could be anything. And I think halfway in, you might kind of doubt yourself and start trying to pivot because this image optimization thing is, the server bill is too high or whatever, right? Like it's cost prohibitive. Or this other thing, this SEO thing, turns out to be a very difficult technical challenge, right? That feels like it's not really worth the time. So you can kind of ping pong between different things. I've tried to build something where it took like 6 months to just even get to the first customer because initially there's a lot of testing. So that time alone feels like why we're doing what we're doing. So basically we're paying for kind of, let's say, the winners of whatever scale you're buying, right? You can be buying like a, you know, something that's generating 5K MRR, you know, 20K MRR, but you're buying the winners of in those kind of categories, right? For those, you know, thousands of people that try to build something that's, you know, 5K MRR, 1K MRR, 20K MRR. And
yeah, I'd argue in a lot of cases, it's also cheaper to buy something that's proven than something that's, you know, starting from scratch. Because of the time investment that you're going to have to put into building it and the unknown. And, you know, it's a long and arduous process to go from 0 to 1,000. And what we're doing is just completely skipping it out and taking something that's proven. It's proven itself in the marketplace and we're trying to grow it. So absolutely, that's why we do what we do.
Yeah. So is there anything to add or we should start wrapping this up and talk about what you're going to ship next week? Because it felt like there was a promise, right? Was there a promise?
There's a promise. Yeah, I'm going to be very intentional this week about my commitments. And what I'm going to commit to is releasing a free and pro version of the plugin. Both of them will include a few bug fixes that I've identified that need to be fixed based on support tickets that have come in over the last 2 weeks. Yeah, by next week, I'll have a new version of either of them. And there's one additional commitment where there's a bug where it's not a bug that needs to be fixed in the actual software itself. It's on my site where there's certain licenses that aren't validating and the users are unable to activate them even though I've got an active subscription. So I want to fix that.
Right. I've heard of this probably from Tim Ferriss, where you commit to a goal and then you actually put up some money. And if you fail, that money goes to sort of something that you're against, right? So yeah, how much is your competitor's license? Like what's the, let's say the cheapest one.
Oh, against. He's free, which suits me quite fine. Two of my biggest competitors are completely free. The one's a big open source initiative, but that's to its disadvantage because it doesn't have the paid user base. It's kind of slow development process. The other one sells add-ons onto their free license.
Sure, sure. Like how much is the add-on? I'm just thinking if you're open to this, let's put some money where our mouths are and so Matt is going to commit to this week to ship this fix free and pro version release. If he fails, then we will actually go to his competitor to get his free plugin and then also purchase the add-on.
I believe they have a bundle pack where they, here we go, I'm not going to mention their name. I don't want anybody to check them out. Okay. Their add-ons are about $25. I'll commit to spending $75 in add-on purchases from them if I don't follow through on my commitments.
Okay. So it seems like we're going to have a successful week after two not so successful week for Matt.
I like this. I do like it. Yeah. Very good suggestion.
Got to raise the stakes, right? So Matt is committed to paying the $75 add-on purchases to his competitor, which shall remain unnamed. If he fails to ship the free and pro version release, which involves some bug fixes on WP discussion board.
Yeah, well, you've just really upped the stakes here for me. But I like it. It's exactly what I need. So, oh gosh. Okay, it's done. It's a deal. What are your commitments for the week?
So my commitment for next week is on the staging server that pricing will go live where Matt can go in and sign up with a fake credit card. So I think that's a big enough commitment, but yet like shippable and
yeah, for sure.
Doable. Yeah.
Awesome.
Would you like to know who my competitors are? I think their plan is like $30 a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty pricey, but I think it's not about the money. It's about the fact that they have my credit card on file that they can do a screenshot at any given time and saying that, hey, like, look, SurveyBot's founder just paid us to get a subscription.
All right. I like those commitments. Looking forward to recapping next week.
Yeah. Now the pressure's on.
Cool.
Hey, but there's just one more thing. There's something exciting we'd like to share with our BGR audience.
Yes. I believe this is going to happen in 2 days' time.
That's right. I've recorded an audio interview with the creator of SurveyBot, the original founder that sold SurveyBot to the company that I bought it from.
Mm, awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. Obviously, I know the context of it, and it sounds like there's going to be a lot of valuable information.
Yeah, we talked about the origin story of SurveyBot, how the founder created it at the beginning, how he got the idea, how he got approach, negotiation, and the sales process in general. There are other nuggets in the interview, which I'm not going to reveal at this point, but our listeners should definitely watch out for it.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Now I'm even more curious. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. All right. Do you want to sign us off?
Yes. Show notes can be found on buygrowrepeat.com. I am at Johnny Tong on Twitter and Matt is at Matt Jerry. We will see you next week.
Bye.